Welcome to the Dearly Woven podcast. I'm your host, Casey Dow. This is the podcast all about making with fiber and the sheep who grow the wool we love to create with. Hi, everyone. Welcome to episode 19. On this week's episode, you will be hearing from Virginia, who raises Teeswater and Wensleydale sheep on her farm named the Yellow Farm, just outside Albany, New York. Just this year, the Teeswater sheep was listed as critical on the Livestock Conservancy's conservation priority list. Virginia has been working hard for over 15 years to help establish the Teeswater breed in our country. Virginia shares about her flock and the breed-up program for the Teeswaters, her love for their wool and working with their gorgeous locks, her website called Shepherd's Talk that she runs with her friend Pam, and some great advice if you are looking to start breeding your sheep. Before we get into the interview, if you would like to follow along on Instagram or Facebook, I can be found at Dearly Woven. And if you have been enjoying the podcast, I would love if you could leave a rating or a quick review. I love reading them and it helps others to find the podcast. All right, now let's get into the interview with Virginia. Hi, Virginia. Thank you for coming on the podcast today.
Hi, Casey. It's my pleasure.
Can you start off by sharing a little bit about yourself and the breeds of sheep that you raise on your farm?
Sure. I started with fiber and sheep probably about 20 years ago. I've been knitting almost all my life, as a lot of us are. My grandmother taught me how to knit, so I'm not a great knitter, but I do knit. And then a friend of mine got me interested in spinning, and I did that for a while. And then we moved to a farm where I could start breeding some interesting breeds of sheep. And so we experimented a little bit for a few years until I found the breeds that we actually fell in love with, which are the Wensleydales and the Teeswaters. And I thought today, for the most part, I would focus on our Teeswaters, because they're a wonderful breed and they have just been added to the Livestock Conservancy, which is a real accomplishment for breeds that need some help. You know, it's not a very, there are not very many Teeswaters in the United States or in the world. And so it's very nice to have them conserved. But I started with spinning, and I've always had animals. I did horses in my first life, and now my second life is more fiber related than sheep.
My daughter, she's my horse girl, and then I'm the sheep person. So we're a combination there. What was it that made you decide on the Wensleydales and the Teeswaters? Like, what drew you to them to want to raise them?
I mean, they're just so striking when you see them. They have dreadlocks running down their forelock, and they are covered with amazing, curly, lustrous locks. And I mean, the first time I saw, I think the first breed that I got interested in were the Wensleydales, and then the Teeswaters shortly thereafter. And, you know, just seeing them made me run right up and say, you know, what is that? Mm-hmm. What kind of a sheep is that? And, you know, the locks, the spinning, the handle, the feel of that fiber is, to me, it's just magnificent. And so I thought, this is what I've got to do. They also are, both of them are breeds that are in the process of being established in this country. They're not breeds that you can just, you know, shop for or find everywhere. And I was lucky enough to get involved with these breeds as the associations were actually forming. And so we are establishing them here in the United States through a breed up process.
Would you like to talk a little bit more about that? Because it starts with you use like a different breed of ewe and you import the semen and start that way, correct?
Yes. With the Teeswater, they're both breeds, the upgrade program is very similar. We've chosen three or four long wool breeds that are available in this country to use as a foundation animal. So that would be like a Cotswold or a Lincoln, Leicester long wools, although we hate to use the Leicester long wools in our program because they also are suffering very few numbers, and they should be participating in their own breeding programs. And you take a registered ewe and one of those breeds that were about as close as we could get to the Teeswaters. Also, they're British long wool breeds. And the first breeding is with 100% UK semen that has been frozen and imported to the country, and the ewe is inseminated, and then her lambs would be considered first generation offspring, and they are started into our registry with a percentage. So the very first ewe lamb born would be a 50%er. We don't, none of the organizations that I'm aware of that do breed up recognize the first generation rams because okay. It's too low a percentage. So, and that would be the other breeds that do breed up are the Gotlands, the Wensleydales, the Teeswaters, and now the Black-Nosed Valet. They're also in the process of being established. So, and it takes a long time because the AI is not as guaranteed to produce lambs as a live cover might be. So, you know, you go through the process of artificially inseminating these ewes, and then sometimes they take and sometimes they don't. And then the lambs, because these are slow-growing animals, usually they're not bred until their second year. Some commercial flocks and some other breeds can be bred that first year. But for the most part, most breeders with the larger British longwools don't breed them the first year. They wait to the second year, which means that so you've inseminated the first animal and then you wait 2 years and then you inseminate the second animal and she may or may not settle with the artificial insemination. And then you do it again. You have to wait another 2 years if you get a ewe before you can inseminate her. So it takes a really long time to build up the blood percentage in the animals to kind of recreate the breed that we can't bring here. And the reason we do that is because the government does not allow any importation of live animals. And there were no Wensleydales or Teeswaters or Gotlands or valets in the United States. And so those of us who love those breeds were left with a process of trying to reestablish them or build them here. And it takes a long time and quite a commitment to do that.
Yes. What percentage are you at now? Like how many lines do you have?
Well, my Teeswaters, I have 96% and 97%, and then I have some lower percentages that in the low 90s that I work with and breeding along. The Teeswaters are the first breed in the United States where the parent association, the UK Teeswater Association in England, sent over some folks to inspect our flocks years ago. And they actually made a pathway for us to actually apply and get our animals into the British flock book. So okay. I have several animals on the farm that are actually in the UK flock book as well as the American flock book so that they are dual registered, but they count as UK Teeswaters as kind of the real deal that you know, for some of us, and you know, each breeder has their own goals, and some people have different emphasis they put on where they want to go. But for many of us, the you know, if we could have imported the animals in the beginning, we would have.
Right.
And so, to get the recognition from them saying yes, these animals or some of these animals have been bred up to the point where wow, they are the breed, they are the Teeswater, is really exciting.
Yes, that's quite an accomplishment.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Now, would you like to talk a little bit about their temperament and personalities?
Sure. They're not a commercial breed. So in other words, they're very few in number. And so they a lot of their instinct hasn't been bred out of them. And I know you are interested in the Livestock Conservancy and some of the heritage breeds. So you probably understand very clearly that, you know, some breeds of animals have been domesticated in such a way that they lose a lot of their, maybe their mothering skills, or they lose because the whole point of that breeding process is to either breed them for meat or for fiber or for something. And they're people aren't really concerned about all of those instincts and preserving them if sometimes, and again, I'm speaking in generalities. I don't mean to broad brush this. So the Teeswaters have not had that background. So they possess very good mothering skills that hasn't been bred out of them because there are so few of them. They're a little flighty. I find that like any sheep, if you put them out in a field and that's your management style and you intend to let them just be out, they will not be easy to handle. Many of us bring them in, for instance, on my farm, because I do it by myself. Pretty much my husband is here, but he's not as much of an animal enthusiast quite as much as I am. So it kind of falls to me. And so I bring my animals into the barn every night. I check them over. I look at them. I handle them a little bit. So they're very used to coming for grain. They're very used to coming when they're called so that I can manage them. If you close sheep into a small area, they're very easy to handle because there's nowhere for them to go and they don't get as panicky. So they are a polled breed, which means they don't have horns. And that's nice for sometimes people aren't looking for animals with horns, but they're large. They're elegant. You know, they have a great sense of balance and carriage about them. And I, you know, I love the personalities. I think they're sweet and interesting and fun. And I have some members of my flock that will come up to me for scratches. You know, they want to be scratched around the cheek or on the shoulder or the back, and others that are a little more standoffish, but I have no problem at all going in with them and catching them and, you know, doing their feed or handling them or checking their health or checking their eyes and all that kind of stuff. So sometimes I think they've gotten sort of a bad rap, or, you know, people get the idea that they are too flighty or they're too difficult to handle. And that's really not true.
What is your flock size at the moment?
My flock size is, I probably have, I'm going to say maybe 35. I probably have 15 to 20 breeding ewes. And at the moment, I don't have any rams. Periodically, I'll keep my ram lambs and use them the next year. And then I usually will sell the offspring as breeding stock. So I don't have any rams on the property at this time. But I have quite a few lambs, which are always fun.
Right. They're so cute.
Oh, so they are. They really are. Oh, what a joy.
Yes. Do they usually have two babies or two lambs at a time?
I would say it's probably that's the most typical, to have twins. It's not uncommon to have singles, and it's also not uncommon to have triplets. Unfortunately, I had quads this year.
Oh, wow.
Which nobody wants quads, at least in my sphere of things, because it's just so many for the mom to deal with.
Right.
And usually, again, it's all on your individual management style. What works for me might not work for somebody else, but I take some of the lambs away from the mom. They have to stay with her and have colostrum. And if she's a good mom, she lets them all do that for the first several days. But I do start supplementing with a bottle because I just worry about their growth rate and staying healthy.
Right. That's a lot.
You know, it's hard. Yeah. It's a lot. It is a lot. And watching the two, you know, obviously sheep, for those of you who don't know, sheep have two nipples that are used in the process. And to see two lambs get on and be able to drink and one or two lambs standing there saying, aww, wait a minute, where's my turn?
Right.
It's, you know, it tugs at your heartstrings. But there are ewes that are heavy milkers that are able to actually take care of three and four lambs on their own. But the Teeswaters and the Wensleydales as well, but are such, the genetics are so rare and difficult to come by that, you know, I tend to micromanage a little bit. And, you know, I can't replace them easily. Not that anybody wants a lamb not to do well, but there's a little more sort of pressure on you when you're developing a breed that's being established.
Right. That's understandable.
Yeah.
Do you have any livestock guardian animals in with your sheep?
We use Highland cows.
Oh, wow. I haven't heard that one before.
Yeah. Yeah, there's always something. Everybody says, I think the management, you know, where you live, what type of farm, who you are, what your personality is, what you want, all kind of goes into the mix of what works for you personally on your particular farm. And we use the Highland cows. They're just great. They will run towards things. If coyotes come around or near, they will go toward them.
Wow.
And address them. And because they're big, I think pretty much any large animal during the day will you know, most coyotes will stay out of the way. They're not looking to do any real damage, hopefully, during the day. And so, yeah, we've had, knock on wood, we have never had a loss to coyotes. We have some neighbors who have lost sheep to different predators, but we've been very lucky. But I also do not allow my sheep to stay out all night. They come to the barn or to the barn yard. So wherever they're grazing, I don't leave them for the night. We have different type of fencings. We have wood fencing. We have wire fencing. I don't use electric.
Okay.
Yeah, I just don't. It's too much of a risk for me to lose. And as I say, if I lose one after all the years of reading them up and their genetics, it's virtually impossible to replace them. So, as well as I'm fond of them, but the Highlands do a great job during the day.
Right. So is your primary purpose for raising them? I mean, obviously to bring these breeds into the country, but also is your primary purpose for raising them their fiber?
Yes, breeding stock and fiber. They also are really good dual purpose sheep. A lot of people breed them and use them as a dual purpose animal. I just feel that in general, there are a lot of sheep breeds that are bred specifically for meat. If you're looking for a meat breed, I would not recommend a Teeswater because that's not what they were bred for originally. They were actually bred for crossing sires in the UK, which means that they'd put them on the hill ewes so that they would create good carcasses for meat quality from the ewes that lived up in the hills. So they do have a good carcass quality, but they're not a commercially bred meat breed. So you can put them in the freezer very nicely. It's very mild tasting meat if that's your thing. But that fiber and the breeding stock, I mean, the fiber is just spectacular. And a lot of folks, not only spinners, but weavers, and you can take the locks and knit them directly into your work if you're a knitter or a crocheter. You can commercially prepare the wool, send it out to be roving or spun into various yarns, which a lot of people do. It has an incredible luster to it. It has a heavy drape to it when you spin it and use it. But the locks themselves, I mean, to me, that's to see that curl and that sheen and that luster and to feel how soft and silky it is. I don't like to card and comb it before I spin it because I lose that. I like to see those gorgeous locks. So I frequently will spin the fibers raw.
So do you spin them without washing them at all? You spin them straight off the sheep?
Sometimes, yes. And I am not a person that is, although I am a farmer, and I'm used to a bit of dirt, but I am not somebody that likes to spin unclean things. Right. And my sheep are usually coated. So that there's no vegetable matter in the fiber, and the fiber is particularly clean. I also frequently, before I shear them, I'll take a warm hose out and hose them several days before they're shorn. And that actually comes from a tradition that they would do in the UK and probably other places around the world, where they take these long wools and they'd walk them into a stream. And they'd stand them in the stream and let the stream rinse and float a lot of stuff off of the fiber before they were sheared, obviously several days, because it takes a while for that fiber to dry out before you could shear it. But then when you shear it, it's so gorgeous and so clean and so shiny, and the feel of it, if you don't scour the fiber, the feel of it is just so buttery almost. I mean, it just has a lovely feel. It's not sticky. It's not unpleasant in any way. You can certainly rinse it or wash it gently if it needs it. There's no problem with doing that. But frequently it's just lovely when it comes off the animal, and it's fun to spin.
Yes, that's so cool. And lock spinning is something I'm really interested in. I was actually, I was checking out your website, The Shepherd's Talk, and I just loved it. It has so many wonderful videos, and the spin to knit workshop really intrigued me. So would you like to share more about the Shepherd Talk website and what it's all about?
Sure, absolutely. Well, my farm is the Yellow Farm, and I'm outside of Albany, New York. And I have a very good friend named Pam Belasco, who had a farm in Connecticut. And we kind of got together and decided, she has done a lot of teaching. And so we got together and created something called Shepherd's Talk, All Things Fiber, where we like to do videos. We like to come up with some innovative ideas. We also go back and go over some of the basics, how to spin, what Z-twist is and S-twist and just things that we think people are interested in. And we do a lot of free videos on our website, and it's www.shepherdstalk.com. And you can go and look at a lot of videos. I have some videos of my sheep, for instance. I have some videos of skirting and choosing different fleeces for their lock structure, and then lock spinning and core spinning and plying. And I don't know, we had so much fun getting together and doing videos that we did that for quite a long time. And then we also highlight once in a while one of our first workshops that we did together was a shawl workshop, where we got some folks together and took raw fiber that we had chosen specifically for this purpose. So it was very clean raw fiber, or we rinsed it gently. We started, I believe, with Jacob and Romney and Wensleydale, maybe the first time. And I forget now off the top of my head whether there was another fiber in there as well. But the whole point was to get people to spin these fibers without combing and carding, so that they could really see the differences between the crimp or the curl or the feel or the length. And people loved it. And then at the end product is we have a very simple triangle shawl that you can knit with it. And it just makes this kind of interesting, nubbly, textural piece that you can throw on and wear. But our main focus was trying to let people understand that these fibers are all different, and that they all look different and feel different, and they can be so much fun to appreciate raw or unprocessed, mm-hmm. if not raw. I think the Jacob we washed, because Jacob sheep have horns, and normally their shepherds do not coat them because of that. So sometimes that fiber was not quite as, I was not as comfortable using what I got without, you know, cleaning it up a little bit. I don't like to handle a lot of really unpleasant material either. And I would never suggest that to somebody else. So we prepare it. And at the moment, we do have a kit on the Shepherd's Talk website, which gives you the video taking you through step by step how to spin the fibers and then how to knit the shawl. And I think at the moment we have some of the fiber up as well. Sometimes we include it as a workshop and we can provide you with all the fiber. And other times you can just get it as a video and provide your own or use different types and different breeds. But it's a lot of fun. There's so much variety out there. And I think, you know, highlighting all the different breeds and trying to appreciate them all. You know, I'm biased because I have British Longwools, and to me they're spectacular, and that's what I like and I want. But there's nothing like a fine wool or other long wools, or, you know, there's just so much variety in our sheep and in our wool that it's exciting to highlight a bunch of it and appreciate it all.
Yes, I've been loving it. I'm getting a little bit here and there of the different varieties, and yeah, even when we get our own flock, I know I'm going to still have to buy everyone's different types of wool, because it's just so fun working with all of it.
Yeah, it is. And the different colors and textures and feels, and then of course the different results you get from, you know, how you decide to spin it and how to play with it, and then will you dye it? I mean, it's just, the world is, it's endless and rather addicting, I would say.
Yes, for sure.
Yeah.
I also saw on there the Virtual Sheep Wool and Festival, and it was like a virtual fiber festival magazine. Would you like to talk about that? Because I didn't get to finish flipping through it yet, but it was so neat. I'm definitely back to check it out.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, we came up with that idea sort of on the fly, because I'm sure, as most of your listeners are aware, the two largest sheep and wool festivals on the East Coast are at Rhinebeck, New York Sheep and Wool, and in Maryland. And Maryland was canceled this year for the first time because of the pandemic and the issues that we're all going through. And so we thought, wow, if people can't get to Maryland, there are a lot of small producers who won't get to sell their wares. Mm-hmm. And so we got together and did it's kind of like a magazine, but the idea is it's supposed to be more like a virtual vendor spot or vendor booth to introduce you to some local people who have different products and just help them get to market. And so that was the idea for it. And then after we started working on it, Maryland actually came up with their own virtual fiber festival, which was really exciting. They did it in very short order. So they didn't have much time to put it together, but I think they did a fabulous job with it. And now, unfortunately, you probably are aware that...
Sorry, y'all. I have to jump in for just a second because the audio cut out. But Virginia was saying, unfortunately, Rhinebeck New York Sheep and Wool has been canceled as well this year.
So I'm assuming they also will do some sort of virtual fiber festival, because so many people look to those fiber festivals to kind of get together and see what's new and find a local, you know, producer. And I don't know, it's just so exciting to go to those festivals. So this was our attempt, sort of a small attempt on the side to highlight some of the local producers or some of the folks that we know and maybe give them a little heads up so that people could, you know, stroll through hopefully a little less like a magazine and a little bit more like a vendor space. But that was the idea behind it.
Yeah, it's really a neat idea.
I'm so glad you like it. Thank you.
Would you like to share the maybe a biggest challenge you had to overcome with starting to raise sheep?
Let's see, the biggest challenge. I think setting the barn up and figuring out a management style, particularly with the Teeswaters and the Wensleydales, because I considered them so incredibly valuable that I was really worried that either I would make some small mistake or I wouldn't be up to par on something. And it took me a while to kind of settle down a little bit and not be worried all the time and feeling like I had to watch them all the time, like a new mother, you know, I mean, you just want to get, and eventually you relax a little bit and you find what works for your farm and what works for your animals. And I tend to micromanage a little bit. I tend to probably do more than I need to. But I enjoy that. It makes me happy to, you know, check them every day and look at them and do their eyes for Famacha to see if we have any parasite issues and, you know, all that type of thing, make sure that they aren't lame anywhere, that there are no issues and that they're eating properly. I think it really helps. But yeah, I guess it would be just eventually relaxing, enjoying them more, and not worrying quite so much about them. Maybe that would be, doesn't sound like much of a challenge, but.
When, you know, I get my flock, I'm sure I'm going to be worried about everything. Yeah.
Well, in the beginning we had, in the very beginning, I would go out in lambing season, I would go out every 2 hours all night to check the ewes to make sure they, you know, because I felt very strongly that I had to be there for every lambing because these were animals I'd spent a lot of money on in the beginning. And certainly I'm inseminating them. And if there's some silly thing that happens and I lose a lamb, I just wouldn't forgive myself. So I did start doing that. And then we graduated to using an audio monitor, baby monitor, so I could hear. And so we put that in the barn, and my husband wasn't really thrilled with that because we'd hear them all night. You know, we'd hear them. Right. They'd paw at night. I'd say, I think she's pawing. I better go and check her because maybe she's, you know, going to start lambing. And then we graduated most recently to using a video camera. So now I can get up every 2 hours and just flip the camera on and say, oh, nobody's doing anything. Everybody's fine. And that way I'm always there. And I still am there every time they lamb. I'm very careful about their breeding dates. So it makes it pretty easy to know that, you know, okay, they should be due within, you know, the next several days, or certainly this week is the week. So it makes it fairly easy to stay around and keep an eye on them. And I'm lucky because I don't work outside the home. I am here on the farm. So, you know, I'm always available to run out and check them, but it is a process. It is a process.
Well, what would you say is the most rewarding thing with raising them?
Well, I love, and I don't know if it's, I guess it is rewarding, but for me, the lambing. It's got to be. I mean, the lambing is just, it's scary and it's worrisome. And the first few years trying to be out there, you know, and worrying that I'd have a lamb backwards or I'd have a, you know, that there would be an issue was very scary. But being there and hearing those ewes just before they lamb, when they're in labor, almost always, they start talking to their babies before they're born.
Oh, wow.
And it's lovely. You know how you get used to your own animals' voices, you know, if you have dogs or cats, you know what they're talking about. Well, with sheep, they use a very soft kind of a it's almost like a humming that they do, and it's talking to their babies. And once their babies are born, they will use that same sound to kind of lick them off and bind with them a little bit. But to hear the ewe calling to those little babies before they're born with that soft, gentle kind of murmur that they do, to me, just is amazing. And then, of course, seeing the lambs born, you know, even though obviously I do know where they come from, I mean, you know, I know how they got there, I know they're growing, but it's still such an amazing thing to see them born and stand up and shake off and, you know, within hours be nursing. And it's just, I never get tired of that. It is just such a joy to see, you know, and hopefully everything goes right and you don't have any issues, which is good. And I would suggest for anybody that's thinking of breeding that doesn't have a breeding background, make sure you have a shepherd near you that you can call. Because, you know, the first lambings, you know, if they go well, it's easy. You don't have to do a thing. But we all worry about the times when there might be a little positioning, repositioning that has to go on. And a veterinarian is really, really important. But a shepherd that's been through it and can come over and say to you, let me show you, or let's do this together. Or, you know, shepherds understand they'll come at 2 o'clock in the morning, you know, in a heartbeat. Because they know that you're having difficulty. And a veterinarian will as well, but I would say, you know, a shepherd is invaluable to help you through the beginning. And I was very lucky to have some mentors that helped me and would come in the middle of the night when I was worried, or I thought I didn't feel a nose and 2 feet coming out. I thought maybe I felt the tail, or, you know, in those first few times, it can be very scary and worrisome. And somebody who's done it a lot before puts you right at ease and says, you know, no problem, we can deal with this. So it's great. That would be my one real recommendation for anybody that's going to breed for the first time. You know, even better would be if you could go to a farm that it's a big farm that's lambing and help. You know, and then you get, you know, it's like baptism by fire, because they're all lambing at one time and you have to be in there and handling it. And that's an experience, but a lot of people don't have the chance to do that.
Yeah, that's great advice though. I'm going to have to look into that for next lambing season. I'm going to be calling everybody. Yeah. Can I come over?
Yeah, right. Can I watch? But yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's exciting and it's different and, the sheep are wonderful, wonderful animals, and certainly the fiber is addicting. And yeah, I would recommend it to anyone as long as you know, get some help. And as you're doing, choose the right breed for you. Mm-hmm. Not the right, you know, don't listen to me that they're my fave breed. That has nothing to do with anyone else making their initial choices. There are some sheep that are so much easier to take care of and some that are much more difficult and some that have different issues and, you know, so yeah, choose what you really love and enjoy it. That's my advice.
Well, that's great advice. And I've just loved talking to you today and hearing all of that. And before we go though, would you like to share your websites and also your contact information in case anybody would like to get in contact with you?
Sure. Absolutely. My farm is the Yellow Farm, and I do have a website, yellowfarm.us. And you can go on that site. My email is yellowfarm@gmail. You're free to email me. Shepherd's Talk is the website that I have with Pam Blasco, and you can contact us. We have contact information there, or you certainly are welcome to email shepherdstalk@gmail.com. And one of us will answer as well. We also have some Facebook pages that we do. Usually during the year, we'll do a Tour de Fleece on our Shepherd's Talk website. This year, the Tour de France has been canceled, so I don't think we're going to do a Tour de Fleece this year. But we try to think of some interesting projects for people to do just to be interesting and to keep a real fiber community going. And we love to see what other people are doing. And it's just a lot of fun. So I'd love to hear from you if you have any questions about the Teeswater sheep, There are two Teeswater Associations in the United States. I happen to belong to the American Teeswater Association, and that's the ATSA, and you can go on their website, and they have all sorts of information on the BREEDA process and standard of excellence for Teeswaters and that kind of thing if you have any questions about the breed. Or contact a shepherd, a breeder near you. All the breeders love to talk about their breeds, so never hesitate to email or call someone, because we all love talking sheep, and certainly each one of us likes to talk about our own breeds, and so never hesitate to ask some questions or stop in, you know, make an appointment and come see the sheep, because that's fun as well.
Yes, definitely. Yes, I've loved talking to everyone because everyone is just so passionate about their breeds, and it's just so fun to hear.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. There's just so much to offer, which makes it really exciting. And it's a lovely thing that you're doing a podcast. It's just what people need and like, and you know, it's a good thing. So thank you as well.
Oh, well, thank you. And thank you so much for coming on here and sharing about Teeswaters. And no I'm problem. Definitely going to, after this, head to back to your Shepherd's Talk website. And I'm pretty sure I'm going to have to join your spin to knit workshop, because I definitely want to learn more about lock spinning.
Oh, there you go. There are some videos on lock spinning on the site as well. But yes, enjoy yourself. Have a lot of fun.
Well, thank you so much again for coming on here and sharing today.
No problem. Thank you, Casey.
Virginia was such a joy to talk to and shared so much great information. If you are interested in Teeswater sheep or would like to know more, I'm sure Virginia would love to talk to you, and I'll have her email in the show notes. And also make sure to check out her website, Shepherd's Talk, that she runs with her friend Pam. It is such a wonderful website filled with so many neat and educational content when it comes to sheep and the fiber arts. Alrighty, that's it for this episode. Until next time, take care and keep creating with fiber.